I have these friends, Dan and Sheila. Actually, they're podcast hosts.
Welcome to Profiling Criminal Minds. I'm Dan.
And I'm Dr. Redmond.
And we are back for more Touching Evil. This is going to be episode 3 and 4, Why Me and Justine. And despite the description that they put on IMDb, Why Me is just Why Me.
Yes.
It's the exact same episode.
Yeah.
And on some level, you might be thinking, wait, isn't that the mistake that that Cracker America did, making the pilot the last episode of the show?
Yes, you might say that.
But they have, unlike in the episode of Cracker, they have changed it in meaningful ways, so it doesn't feel like the last episode of a TV show anymore. It just feels like an episode of a TV show. Amazing how you can do that. I'm looking at you, people who made the American Cracker. Who did such a lousy job on the American Cracker.
All I can say is I'm in a state of shock.
Yeah.
Except because I'm going, okay, who knew that I really want to do the podcast so that I can get to the next
one? I know, right? That is not something I was expecting.
No.
But here we are.
And what has happened with these two episodes, and it's very clear, is they have taken... Remember, when we're watching the British one, we keep saying it's such a mess because usually they're telling two stories and they're not well connected.
Yep.
This show has taken... Disconnected the stories. So,
problem solved.
Problem solved, obviously.
Yeah, it's weird because you go back and you think about Touching Evil and it's like they didn't know how to tell these giant expansive stories. Mm-hmm. And this show just isn't trying to tell these giant expansive stories.
Let's not bother. No, we're going to take the stories, and if some of them can be split into two, we'll split them into two. And if we have to write the odd one ourselves,
then we'll just do that.
I don't even know if they have to write the odd one themselves.
I guess we'll see, right? But like, you get to Justine and we hear people are getting murdered outside of strip clubs, and it's the second half of the horse murder episode.
Yeah, that's exactly it. What are they going to do with that?
And so they're just going to do the horse murder episode separately, I guess.
Yeah.
Which is such a smart move.
And how nice was it to see Talia?
Oh my God, yes, Talia Winters from Babylon 5 and NYPD Blue. Oh, so great to see her.
It was show. So they were filming, obviously, in Vancouver.
Of course they were filming in Vancouver. Come on, look at the show. It's raining all the time. This is an incredibly Vancouver show, and always was. Yeah. So let's start with Why Me, which, I mean, we barely have to synopsize it because we just covered this episode. It is the exact same episode, but it works so much better. And I mean, the thing is, it's like, think of all of the nice things we've said about Robson Green as an actor here on the podcast. And it's like, they managed to, with like Jeffrey Donovan's portraying Dave as such a mess. Right, such an absolute mess. I mean, it does defy credibility a little bit that they would keep a guy who's this much of a mess on, because he really is.
Except right?
He does get the job done.
And I think that they're willing to carry that because the head of this unit. Well, first of all, he was involved in the construction of this unit.
Yep.
And that makes a serious difference. And then I think there are
that's not a difference. That was true in the original as well.
Yeah, I know. Well, yes, I know. But the relationship between his boss and him is
different. Very different.
They're co-equals.
Yeah, and they're close.
And yes, they're close friends. So he's willing to ask the rest of the team to take some of the weight.
Yeah.
While he's resolving these issues. Because what I really liked in both these episodes is that we get an explanation of what this has done to his brain.
Yep.
a fuller explanation. Like, this is the thing that was missing
from the original. Absolutely.
Really, I mean, Jeffrey Donovan is nailing it.
Yep.
And they've written him a whole new, like, all sorts of a lot of the new writing is around Cregan.
Yeah.
They've given Cyril a different.
And this is what I was going to say. The Cyril thing is they're using him as such a great mirror of Dave, right? Yeah. Because Dave needs to be around him to help understand, like, the fact that in 1 second he can be completely there and then he'll just go off the rails. And yeah. By like watching it happen in Cyril, he's understanding what's happening to himself.
Yes, and the problem is that Cyril can take medication. He doesn't like all of them.
Yeah, they but
like medication.
He can take medication, but Dave can't take medication for having been shot in the head. He has physical damage to his brain that he can't do anything about.
And unless it repairs, so he has to. Well, no, he has to start creating new.
Yeah.
Synapses and everything else.
He has to learn new ways to do things. Yeah.
And so we're seeing this, and they are better explanations
mm-hmm.
of the problems. Like, I'm really interested in how they're going to develop Cregan in this. Like, we got really upset. Whereas here, in the previous one, whereas here,
they feel like they're developing and they're thinking about that. Whereas it's like Dave just kind of seemed terrible.
Just a terrible human being.
He's just a terrible guy. And none of that was placed on his injury.
No, none of it. Whereas here, they're quite relevant. Sometimes he is inappropriate.
Yep.
And then he's more self-aware.
Yeah, because he looks at the reactions people have and he's like, right, that was an inappropriate thing to say. And he modulates.
And sometimes he asks his partner.
Yeah.
That wasn't what I was supposed to do.
Right? Was it? Yeah. Oh, okay.
Okay.
And it's charming. Sorry. I'm not going to pretend it's not charming. They're doing a really good job here.
And he talks about the problem with like the example of the red lights and the green lights and the yellow lights.
Yep.
And sometimes you'll see a red light and go.
Mm-hmm.
And he has to just.
Because there is stuff that is like, that is so built into how you navigate the world that you don't even think of it as information, you know, it's just you automatically operating. That's so ingrained. And he doesn't have that stuff anymore.
That part is.
And that's really interesting.
Yeah, no, we're finally finding out who and what Dave is. It's funny, the scars on the other side of his head.
I know. I wonder if there's some significance to that, or if it was just an artistic choice. If they investigated the part of the brain that controlled the stuff they wanted him to be bad at, and they put the wound on that side, or if it is just an artistic choice.
Well, given everything else that's been going on,
they might have
had research do that.
Yeah. It's entirely possible. I don't know if that's it for sure, but it's definitely possible given what a good job they're doing.
Well, I think that the executive producers are somebody called the Hughes brothers.
Yeah. Well, no, but I mean, that does not necessarily mean they were that involved, right?
No, I know.
Yeah. That often just means that was, you know, made by their production company. Because the other executive producer is Bruce Willis, and I guarantee he was not involved.
No. But it just because I see this, I'm going, something is different, and their research, they've got it clearly a research.
You want to find out who the showrunner was.
Yeah.
Yeah, who the on staff right there executive producer was. That's who you want to find out. And we can do that between this week and next week. All right.
Yeah, because we want to send kudos because they obviously watched it. Saw the potential, which we
and started filling in holes
leaving out extraneous stuff.
Yep.
And so I'm quite
very impressed
with this. Even at the end of this episode, the why me episode, his partner is not so stupid. Yep. She knows he's going to do something stupid. She knows the girl is probably going to going to do something.
Set people on fire. Yeah.
Except here, it's accidental.
Yeah.
You know, she accidentally drops it. And because of how he has been moving himself, and she has a fire blanket, like she's got a blanket.
Ready to go.
Immediately suffocate the fire. Yeah. So he doesn't end up in the hospital.
Yeah.
He has surface burns because she had them put out right away.
Yes.
You know, I mean, I'm sure he went to the hospital. They treated
him. Well, honestly, let's face it. I'm sure he doesn't go to the hospital because that would have required them to get a new set for a scene that doesn't matter. Mm. You know?
No, no, but I can accept that in between he went to the hospital.
Briefly, exactly.
Yeah, briefly.
But like they're just surface burns. It's not terrible at all. He's going to be out for a little amount of time.
Yeah, the EMTs might have even covered it.
Yeah, exactly.
Dealt with it, right? And said, yeah, you can go home. Mm-hmm. So like there's a bit of smartness to this. You know, you can see that for Cregan this time. The problem is the Rohypnol, not himself.
Yes.
You know, that it was stupid to take the Rohypnol because it did affect him a little too fast.
Okay, if you were listening to this show, apparently Rohypnol, like, doesn't take 40 minutes to kick in, as in real life, but just instantaneously you start getting wobbly on your feet and can't function. It's a bit much.
Yeah. You know?
But you know what? For the purposes of this episode, they need her to have a drug that makes people wobbly and unconscious almost immediately. Right?
Yeah, every time.
And I love, one thing I actually really liked was the characters immediately saying, why would someone sit around? There's no fight. Why would someone just sit around and let themselves be burned alive? And then immediately like, well, they were probably drugged. This wasn't treated as a mystery by the staff the way it was in the original. It's like, well, they were almost certainly drugged. You know, people do not just sit around and let themselves be set on fire. They probably weren't awake when they were being, you know, set on fire. I really enjoyed that.
Yes. Yeah, so there are so many positives about these episodes. Taking always these stories and narrowing it down. But what I like, there's nobody else, really. But the show is run around Dave Cregan.
Yep.
He's the only one that we're getting a full sense of, except for Cyril.
Yeah.
Surprisingly, we still have no idea about his partner or any of the other people.
Exactly. So, the only difference being that this is the episode when the guy goes off and his wife has given birth.
Mm-hmm.
Right? He goes off to be there at the birth of his daughter, and so he's checked out for most of the episode.
Yeah.
So yeah, that is the one thing we find out about. It is a problem that his like partner has had almost nothing to do, and we don't know anything about the guy who is right now replacing Mark before Mark presumably shows up next week.
To replace Jonathan,
exactly. You know what the crazy part is? I watched both this and the original.
Uh-huh.
Right? And my memory of the ending of Justine, and we'll get there when we get there, right? In which, you know, spoiler alert, he murders that guy. My memory of it was this version of it, not the original Touching Evil's version of it. Weird, right? No,
that's weird. I didn't have that problem because
you didn't watch this.
Yeah, yeah. We finally figured out when I said I thought I watched this. We've been talking about that. And then all of a sudden I'm watching and I'm going, no, I didn't watch that. And then I went and checked when it ran and I'm going, oh, 2004, yes. And then I was in Sault Ste. Marie, and it was a real mess between Ottawa and Sault Ste. Marie.
And so, yeah, there's just a whole bunch of stuff you just missed.
I missed. And so
it's like when I was at university, and there's just 3 years of television I know nothing about. Like, no, there's these 3 years where it's like there were all new shows and all new things. And it's like, I have no idea what happened those 3 years. Now I don't watch television. You know, there's no real new television anymore. Like, that's not a thing that happens. All of television is just reality shows and shows about Chicago. So, you know,
Well, no, The Equalizer, NCIS.
There is still, well, no, but I mean, yes, NCIS is still on. Like, that's not a new show. That's what I'm saying. I'm not missing out on new television because there is no new television.
Well,
CSI is still on. NCIS is still on. Law and Order is still on. And I'm not exaggerating. There are four different shows about Chicago and the various metropolitan, you know, organizations that work in Chicago.
In the fire department, they get a thing for TV, and they get, and the only one that is really unique is probably The Equalizer.
Yes, where, and I mean unique in the sense that it's based on an 80s TV show, and there's also a series of Equalizer movies going on right now.
Yes, well,
the third one just came out.
I think I've watched one and two now.
Yeah, they're not fantastic. They're fine. They're fine for what they do.
Yeah, but they're pretty basic. And
yeah.
And the Queen Latifah show is closer to the original.
Yeah.
And deals with social issues. And
that is the best part.
Yeah. And she is, and, you know, I mean, the whole, she has a whole family structure, which, of course, the original Equalizer didn't have.
Did not so much. Yeah. Well, no, but that's back in the 80s. And this is a weird thing that you'll see in a lot of modern television. They're obsessed with having these giant casts on their TV show. Like, you know, the original Equalizer. It's him. It's Keith Ciarbiaca. You know, oh, God, I'm blanking on Hector Salamanca's actor's name. Mark Margolis is in a lot of, but not all, the episodes. And Control will be there most of the time, but he's only ever in, like, one scene a week.
Yeah.
Like, they didn't have it did not have this huge cast the way all modern television shows have just gigantic casts. It's very interesting.
It's really funny because some of the social issues they're dealing with in the new Equalizer, they were dealing with in the old Equalizer. It's very interesting.
Real sad that we didn't figure any of this stuff out in the intervening 40 years.
40 years, right? It's particularly, it was the housing one. I don't know if you remember it with Marissa Berenger.
I do. I love that show.
You know, the housing, that episode. And
still a problem in New York. If anything, it's worse.
Yeah.
All right. So we should probably talk a little about the changes they made to Why Me. It's interesting. They streamlined a bunch of stuff, like the father of her children was her first victim a couple of weeks ago and nobody found the body, which I thought was a nice touch. And it's a way to streamline it and get through this faster. They give you there's that interesting moment where they give you a couple of solid alternate suspects, and they don't do the Hannibal Lecter of fire, the sexy fire obsessive who lives in France.
Seeing him from the twins episode of Criminal Minds.
I know. I was gonna say the guy who was, instead of the sexy French Hannibal Lecter of fire, you had the guy from what I often argue is the worst episode of Criminal Minds.
There was two episodes.
Yeah, I call it one episode, though. Yeah. I know it was a two-parter. You think I don't remember The Inspired and The Inspiration?
Yeah.
You think I could ever forget those episodes of television, though I may want to? Come on. Oh, yeah, no, it was great seeing him as the arsonist, and also the guy who's the boyfriend of the first victim, who they're also very suspicious of. And it's like, you've got, it's structured much more traditionally like a regular cop show where there are some suspects, there's some suspects, they don't like the suspects, you know, they harass people, they just do cop stuff. And the interesting part is they do this really interesting thing where they are so ready to assume that this guy, the boyfriend of the dead woman, because he's so obviously such a scumbag, he tells them who did it right away, and they don't listen to him or believe him because they have already written him off. And so later in the episode, they're able to go back, and he's just like, yeah, I told you she's a liar and you can't believe anything she says. So when she said that her, you know, the father of her kids is working on an oil rig 2 months at a time and she only sees him every now and then, You know, it's like, why did you believe her? I could have told you who the husband of the father of that kid was. And guess what? He's a dirtbag. And so then they track him down and she killed him first.
Yeah.
But it's like, I like the note that they specifically don't listen to this guy. They immediately just judge who this guy is. They judge that this guy doesn't need to be taken seriously or listened to. They, you know, they bully him and they shove him around. Right? Because they're cops. And the solution to the mystery was right in front of them had they just been listened to this guy that they were predisposed not to trust.
Yeah.
And it's a nice little touch in the episode that, like, they get called on out on it. I mean, I'm sure it's not going to change their behavior, but they get called out on it by the character.
Yes, and that's interesting. I also, like, they make things flow so you're not asking those questions because he just finds a book on leukemia.
Yeah.
Like, he doesn't all of a sudden out of thin air decide she's dying.
No, he's searching her house and it's like she's got a lot of trashy paperbacks and then she's got a book on dealing with leukemia. It's like, well, she ain't reading that for fun.
No. So, you know, and then they go to her doctor.
Yeah.
Who then confirms, yes, she has a 4 months maybe to live.
Yeah.
That the leukemia is rapid and it's adult, it's rapid, she's dying.
Well, and the thing is, the one change they made, right, is they just said it wasn't treatable. And I think that was a mistake. I think they should have kept the explanation from the original in that the minute that she cut off all contact when I told her that the treatment could endanger her pregnancy.
Yeah, well,
I think that was a smart choice because it reinforced her obsession with this child and how she wanted to settle all old scores before her child was born.
Okay. I can see what you're saying.
Yeah. That is just one thing. It's not a major point.
No,
that's the only thing the original did better than this episode did. I want to make it clear. I don't think the original did anything else better. Right. Yeah. That is the one place where I think the original episode did have an edge because that statement that it's like she could have gotten treatment, but her baby's life was more important than her own. Boom. Yeah. Like it reinforces everything about why this character is doing what she's doing.
Yes. And of course they dropped the, and it makes sense. So that she was the only child that was adopted. So
yeah. They left out the whole thing about the child molester in the group home and all of that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because again, that was, I'm not going to say completely superfluous because it's interesting color in the original, but you only got 40 minutes here and you got to cut something. And they did a better job with, they did a better job with the red herrings, right?
Yeah.
This time. So they didn't need that extra story about the guy who was avenging his abuse.
Yeah.
Yeah. So no, I thought that was a really smart move. But yeah. It's a very well-structured version of the episode. It's better. And as you say, because they've done a better job of letting us know who Dave is, his absolute recklessness with this woman, right, makes so much more sense.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like you buy it right away.
Yeah. That he doesn't make good decisions sometimes because his brain isn't letting him make good decisions.
Exactly.
And he used to make good decisions.
Yeah. And oh, absolutely.
And he explains that. I used to know these things. I don't anymore.
Yep. Yeah, it's smart. It's very smartly handled this time. I really liked this episode, and I wasn't expecting to, given how hard we were on Why Me last time. Well, the final episode of Touching Evil last time, I was not expecting. But yeah, like, they're knocking it out of the park here with these adaptations.
And I will, okay. And the one question I have, because please, I don't remember, did we know, like at the end, they say, he asks about the mother.
Yeah. She, in the original, no, we don't get that story dying and the baby being born.
I thought that.
That's new. Yeah.
And I thought that was a good touch so that it kind of puts a finality.
It does. Yeah. It wraps it up.
And because it's a baby.
Yeah.
The baby will be taken care
of. And might have a chance, exactly.
And might have a chance because the mother,
mm-hmm,
right, has been doing everything right during the pregnancy.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what's so bizarre. Outside of this fixation, when she found
out the score settling, Yeah.
The score settling, she's been doing everything right to save the baby.
Mm-hmm. That's become all she thinks about.
Yeah, and we don't have any of these sort of intimations that, you know, that she's going to kill herself and the baby and the fire and all of that sort of stuff, you know.
Oh no. Yeah, so no, it's very well done.
Yeah, it doesn't leave you going, say what?
Yeah.
You know.
No, not at all.
Yeah, so no, let's not move at all. On to Justine.
All right, let's move on to Justine, which, as we previously mentioned, is the second half of the horse murder episode.
Yeah.
Yeah, no kids, so I assume we're going to see them later this season. I haven't checked, but like I'm sure they're saving that for later this season. And it's just the thing about the woman who's in jail and the guy who's obsessed with her, and they've changed it so he's killing women who he sees as avatars of her.
Yes.
And I'm just going to say it. I think it's really good.
Oh, this was a good episode.
Yep. And meanwhile, in the background.
I love the end.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that was really good. But meanwhile, we're also dealing with the aftermath of the Hinks murder.
Yes.
And Jonathan having to deal with that. And okay, I'm a big fan of this actor, and you might not recognize him. Right. I like him a lot. It's an interesting thing because no one mentions how strange it is that there's a British guy on the team.
I know. I always thought that. I'm going, why do they have a British
guy? Why do they have a British guy on the team? And it's never addressed in any way, shape, or form.
No, no. Unless, and maybe it's sort of, what show was I watching? I was watching some show and the kid had, her child had a British accent. And she goes, what was it? She goes, well, it must, she said, I sent him to British boarding schools.
Okay.
She said, and it seems to have stuck because somebody does ask, why does he have a British accent?
It's a good question.
You know, and so she said, yeah, his whole schooling was in England, British boarding schools. And he acquired his British accent. Unlike you and your brother who dropped their
Australian quite quickly.
Accent almost, it didn't take you long once we got back to Canada.
Yeah, it's fascinating. Yeah. So this actor, I'm a big fan of. He has a very interesting story because he went to medical school and, you know, graduated from medical school and was all ready to take his, you know, tests and become a doctor. And he's like, what if I just act instead? And so he went off and so he's a fully trained medical doctor. He went off and became an actor and he had some success. The Highlander TV show, he was consistently the best part of that after he joined the cast in season 3. It's very interesting, but it's one of those things where it's like he could never get to that next level, like never became a regular cast member on a show. And so tragically, after like 20 years of grinding away, he did go back to med school and got his qualification, became an anesthesiologist. So right now he is an operating medical doctor.
Isn't that funny?
After years of just doing wonderful work as an actor. And I'm going to say it. I think he's really good in this because almost nothing to play. And I think he's better than the original guy was.
Oh, for sure. He's better than Jonathan was.
Yeah. I think he's fantastic in this.
Pretty clear.
He has so much less to play, right? He has so much less opportunity to talk about the character. So he's got to get everything that the original guy did in literally, I didn't count, but it's like 8 lines of dialogue. He's got to sell this entire thing. And he does it.
I know.
He's really good in this. And like, it makes me sad. We're obviously not going to see more of him.
Maybe after he retires.
Yeah, maybe after he retires. Yeah. He'll go back to acting. Who can say, right?
Right.
But yeah, like he is just really good in this episode and gets like just completely sells the horror of this situation and the tragedy of this situation of him having done this thing. Right. He thought because. And then his daughter is born brain dead. Yeah. Oh, wow. It's, it's rough. It is a rough part of the episode, and it's all going on in the background. But, and the weird part is, and this is the key thing, because Dave, right, is not a guy who is a calculating murderer from the government before, because now he's a guy who can't control his urges, mm-hmm. because he's a guy who can't function, like, he's flip-flopping, right? He's telling Zach Grenier, the boss, what went on, but then covering for Jonathan actually tracks more. Because again, you can get a lot of runway out of this guy not being fully in control of his decisions and operating on instincts, because there's part of him that intellectually knows he has to tell his boss. And so he gets the wherewithal to tell his boss, but you have the other part of him that has no problem with what Jonathan did, right? And wants him to get away with this.
Yeah.
And the key part is, we don't get that. They cut a line. And I think cutting the line saves this whole interaction. You cut the line where he says, I would have killed him, and then turned myself in the next day.
Yes, I thought, yes. Yeah.
Yeah, that's the line you had to cut to make all of Dave's action made sense.
Yeah, because you have the buildup. We've already had the buildup in three episodes, and we were told in the last episode very clearly that his brain doesn't make good decisions.
Exactly. At
times, it doesn't know, it can't access the part mm-hmm. that would tell him exactly what he's supposed to do here.
Yep.
You know, so he drops the bullets in the river at mm-hmm. the end, but he doesn't have the same sort of anxiety about it.
No.
So I thought it was really tense. It was, then it becomes, you know what it makes tenser is when he shoots the guy.
Oh my God, that was so fantastic.
When everybody's so tense because they know that Cregan is not making good decisions, yep. periodically.
Absolutely.
And so you actually have real fear that Cregan might kill him.
He might just shoot Jonathan. Yeah.
Yeah.
Or he might just put his gun down and let Jonathan shoot that guy. Like, he isn't making good decisions. And it makes the whole scene that much more exciting.
Yes, it did. It created a tension that wasn't there in the first one.
No, not at all.
You know, and by making it a very clear situation, this guy and her, right, that it's just between the two of them and not all of this Artemis Shmurtemis stuff,
yeah.
or Amethyst or whatever they call
Amanthus
it.
Amanthus or whatever it was, yeah. You know, well, no, but that will be later in the season, obviously.
Oh, yeah, but they'll have to do something.
They'll do something completely different with it, of course, but it will be later in the season. They're using every part of the buffalo on this show. I think it's clear to say.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's very interesting what they've done here.
And I thought Talia.
She does a great job.
She does a super job.
100%.
You know, and. Sorry. She is far more capable of standing up. Like, you can see that this is to Dave, for example.
Yeah. Oh, with no hesitation. Yeah.
And she also has done all this women's rights stuff.
Yep.
And all of these other things, right? She said, not going to get me out. I'm here for life. She knows that, but.
Mm-hmm. But they've given her something that they can blackmail her over, whereas now she's got a daughter, but rather than just her having a daughter who doesn't talk to her, she has a daughter who she gave up at birth, who she's never seen since.
Yes.
And who is now, because she's been in jail so long, 17 years old, right? And she wants to meet her daughter for the first time, and Dave says he can do that for her if they help her catch this guy.
Yeah.
And it's very nice.
No, I thought it was really nice. And then he goes against, because the social services then, after she beats the guy up.
Well, and what I really liked.
She run after him, not only
she beats him up.
After him in her high heels, she beats him up.
But I think, like, while I enjoyed the scene in the original, and I did enjoy that scene, you can go back and listen to us talk about it, where she disabuses like the teens of the romance of what they were doing. Right. She explains that there was nothing romantic, or and it's like it's just a guy who's sexually obsessed with me. And this thing was named at a club I used to strip at and all of that stuff.
Yeah.
Like her, him just murdering people who are like her. Right. And so her and her responding to that by getting the chance to just beat the hell out of him is both more honest for this guy's messed up structure, right? His messed up headspace, how this lust and violence has become one in his head. And that's why he's obsessed with a serial killer. Right. And so, and it makes her rage so much more understandable because it's not this abstract, he was corrupting children and she's pissed at him. It's a very clear, oh, he was killing people who looked like me.
Yeah, he's dressing them up in my clothes.
Yeah, and killing people who look like me. Yeah, I have a right to be pissed about this, and I'm going to take it out on him, even though that's going to ensure that he, you know, doesn't get a chance to confess, right? And he might get away, because what does she care about that?
Yeah.
The cops know he is now. She's gotten a chance to beat him to hell. That's all she wanted.
Yeah. It is.
It's more relatable, is I guess what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, the whole episode is more relatable, and then at the end, where you know, because Jonathan, of course, then just does kill him
as he did. Does execute the guy.
Does execute the guy, but has thrown all of the pictures of these women in front of him.
Yep.
There's no appealing, and basically, there's no.
Oh, by the way, I can't believe I went through this whole time. His name is Peter Wingfield. I didn't say the actor's name that whole time. I just realized. If you want to look him up and see all the wonderful stuff he's been in, his name is Peter Wingfield. Sorry, please continue.
Okay. No, what I was going to say is that, of course, then they want to rescind her meeting her daughter.
I know, and Dave won't let them.
They won't let them. He says, no, we promise.
Yeah, and we made a promise.
Yeah, brings her her...
And she did everything. It's like, it's not our fault. It's not her fault that, like, we can't convict this guy.
Yeah.
He ran, and she did a reasonable thing.
Yeah. And what's interesting, because she would have never got him back. They would have never got him back again.
Yeah, of course.
And if he had gotten away. And it is interesting. What was I going to say? That, like, when she's talking, right? And they're trying to... Well, no, you have to persuade him. And it's just like, no, I know what John's are. It's again, that whole thing. I know my clientele.
Yeah.
I know.
She knows how these men operate, what these men want. Like she understands their psychology better than he ever could.
Yeah. Any of them seem to do that. And I was thinking about that. Yeah. They've got a book and this is what you're supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
No, yes, that works in some cases. Unlike Dave Cregan, who thinks he can make everybody.
Yep. Listen.
No, she just says no. No, he'll fall back. How can you be so sure? We've got a blah, blah, blah. She says no. He'll call back.
He'll call back. He needs this. He's been writing me for, you know, how long? He needs this.
He needs to be treated like a... He wants to be humiliated. He wants.
You gotta stomp on him a little if you want him to do what you want, because that's what he's here for. Yeah.
And
he's here for the degradation.
The reason he did it, they had to write in, and that is because, of course, she had cut off all all of the people that had been writing her.
And yeah, she had completely cut off any contact with them.
Yeah.
And that's why it motivated him to start doing the killings to get her attention again.
Yeah.
And that makes sense. That makes perfect sense. Yeah, no, it's a very well done version of that episode. Mm-hmm. Like, it's weird. We're four episodes in now. One was a two-parter, but we're four episodes in now, and everyone has been better than the original. Like, I'm super excited to see what they do next.
Yeah.
What are they doing next? I gotta ask.
Oh, well, I'll
while I talk, you check it out.
Yeah,
Another interesting thing about the episode is I just want to remind everybody that Jonathan's probably not going to jail that long. And I mean, this is just I want everybody to remember that in the FBI, which is what these guys are in, There has never been a bad shooting. That's never happened. In the entire history of the FBI, and they've been around 100 years, there has never been an unjustified shooting by the FBI. That time, they pulled over two random people, and a woman was driving, a man was in the passenger seat, and they shot the man in the face with an assault rifle. That was a good shooting. I mean, he had done nothing. They were in a blue car, and some bank robbers, woman driving, man in the passenger seat, had been driving a blue car, and that's why they shot him in the face. He survived. He got his settlement. But the point is, as part of that, you know, multi-million dollar settlement, he had to sign a piece of paper saying the FBI did nothing wrong. So Jonathan will never work in law enforcement again. But again, the FBI has never had a bad shooting. You know, the Tsarnaev brothers who did the Boston Marathon bombing, they also, like the older brother, also had like kind of a little gang that robbed and murdered drug dealers. And so they were going to talk to another member of his gang that robbed and murdered drug dealers. And no one knows what happened in the room, but there were four FBI agents and one guy. And that guy ended up getting, even though he didn't have any weapons of any kind, ended up getting shot to death. But again, nothing the FBI has ever done has been wrong. So just FYI, Jonathan's not going to jail. He'll be in therapy and he'll never work in law enforcement again. But no, he is... Unlike in the original, you know, we talked last week about the differences between how American cops are treated and how British cops are treated, and how, like, there can be an accountability when British cops murder somebody, but how that never happens in America. So just keep that in mind.
Yeah, well, no, and that is the interesting thing, that we get that scene
in
that episode where he assumes that he will, after some time off, get to come back to work.
Yeah, and Zach Grenier is like, no, what?
Okay, so what we're getting next is the Lainey episode.
Oh, damn. Okay. I'd be interested to watch them do that in 1 hour.
Well, they call it Slash, but it says a serial killer hanging women is on the loose.
Yeah, that's what it is. All right, next.
Okay, and then the next one is called Memorial. Three dead bodies are found by a monument.
Okay, that one's probably new.
Yeah.
I mean, that could be war relief.
It could be.
It could be a version of war relief, but it might be new, just based on that. I can't say for sure, and I'm interested to find out. Well, okay. So now, before we... Before we wrap on this one, which, again, really great episode, really great job by Peter Wingfield. Again, managing to do so much with 5 minutes of screen time for his character before he goes into that room to kill the guy. The dude's had 5 minutes of screen time. And maybe I'm just going to sign off him because I like the actor, or because they had the character not murder a dog. It is America, after all. But yeah, I really do think he did. It's not just my bias. I really do think he did a better job than the original guy, and he had less material to work with, and he still did a better job. But what really impresses me, though, is I'm watching this episode and it is left completely ambiguous whether anybody thinks he did the right thing or not.
Yeah. Well, Cregan says he did the right thing.
Yes.
I understand why you did Hinks. I don't understand this.
Yeah. And I mean, we understand why he's killing this next guy, which is, you know, he's done anyway. He's not going to be in law enforcement. He wants, you know, he's distraught over. And by the way, that's another reason he's not going to get off. He's freaking like mentally unwell over what just happened with his daughter.
Yeah.
Like, this dude is not going to jail. He's just not.
Nope.
Right? But he's so distraught over what happened to his daughter that it's like, you understand why he's doing this. But what I find really interesting about it here at the end is, like, Dave is completely 100% on board with killing Hinks.
Mm-hmm.
He went there to kill Hinks, and this is the key part. He doesn't think he would have felt guilty about it, and he had no intention of turning himself in. And that completely changes Dave's character. Yeah. Because whether the original Dave Cregan meant, if he meant that, you know, it makes him a real weirdo. But if more likely, he was just saying that to maintain his, you know, moral superiority over people, which is something I believe that Dave doing. Because that Dave was kind of a dirtbag.
Yep.
Whereas this Dave, I think he would have killed Hinks, and I think he would have tried to get away with it.
Yep.
I think that's fair to say, right? And who knows how he would have been able to emotionally process that. But it's like, you really get that sense from this version of the character. And I'm just trying to say, it's like, is the show saying it was, and this is what I wanted to ask you, is the show saying it was right to kill Hinks? Because I know what Dave thinks, and we know what Jonathan thinks, and even the boss, you know, he's firing Jonathan, but it's not like he's going to pursue it any further. Right? He's shutting down the look into Hinks's murder. And so my question is, what is the show's feelings on whether it was right to kill Hinks? Because I don't think the original ever decided.
Okay, what I would have to say, I'm not sure. I think maybe the show would have let. Oh, I don't know. It isn't. It that's. Funny, but because they don't treat, because Krakauer doesn't feel any guilt about this. This is the difference too.
Yeah. Right?
Krakauer has no negative feelings technically about having killed Hinks. Hinks needed to die. He's not walking around screwing up. He's upset because of his daughter.
Yes.
I mean, they've slightly shifted things because they don't have as much time. So they have to tighten things so they're not going to have...
But they left out all of these scenes where he was torturing himself.
Yeah, and...
And losing it.
Yeah, and he's not torturing himself here every now and then. But but you see him, when he is... so I think the show might be saying that it's going to be... They're going to accept... They don't want vigilantism, but... what the hell, this guy was never going to get caught.
Yeah.
And so probably it's kind of all right, but because they don't make him feel guilty about it.
Yeah.
They make him, all of everything that is happening to him in that episode, you know, his distraction and everything, all has to do with his daughter.
None of it has to do with guilt.
None of it has to do with guilt. None of it has to do, you know, and so you don't have Cregan going and making these sort of weird
statements, yeah,
you know, that kind of muddy the waters.
No, you do have the boss saying that it was a selfish thing for him to do.
Yes, it was selfish. It was because of the rest of us. But that's different than saying it's wrong.
Yeah. And it's like, right? You did it because, and it's like, it's this idea of like, he killed Hinks because he couldn't live with failing to catch Hinks. And I'm like, that's a pretty convoluted reason to judge somebody for murdering a serial killer.
Yeah. And given who the guy was. Yeah. But, you know, I mean, they do have, I could see Hotch saying that.
Oh, totally. 100%. Okay. I could see Hotch saying that.
Yep. Yeah.
No question.
You know, I mean, you do when you're a cop.
We love you, Hotch, but, you know, you beat a serial killer to death with your bare hands, but you certainly don't, you know, want to give other people the right to do that. You guys are nothing if not hypocritical.
Well, and I think that this may be part of that it is the FBI, this is part of the FBI.
Yeah, it's the culture of the FBI.
And the culture of the FBI, it's partly selfish, it's partly Jonathan figured it out. I mean, this is the thing. No, Dave figured it out.
Dave figured it out, Dave, yeah.
but only because Dave sees weird patterns.
Mm-hmm.
And he figured out that one of them
must have done it.
Must have done it. One of the four of them must have done it.
Yeah.
And he can't figure out which, and then Jonathan just tells him.
Yeah. Well, no, and what I liked is that it was the same. It almost goes unsaid. In fact, honestly, they might have said, they might have added the line, which I think is kind of an important line that they shouldn't have cut, which is that it's like, Hinks felt nothing. And when you feel nothing, you don't kill yourself.
Yeah, I think that...
That was a mistake to cut.
Yeah, I'm not sure where they could have gotten that in exactly.
But the idea that Hinks was incapable of feeling guilt. Yeah. And so why would he kill himself? Because it's like you needed to get in three lines where he said, we all want him to have killed himself because we imagine he was racked with guilt. But that man couldn't feel guilt and he never would have killed himself.
Yeah. Well, so they gave, yes, but they, yes. So that, but you see, that's a logical thought.
Yeah. And Dave is coming at from it. Dave. So yeah, he's not coming at things logically.
No.
And it's like, we can say that that happened inside his head, but I really think they should have found some way to get that line in there. You know?
Well, okay, you know, so there's little bits and pieces.
If we've only found a single place where the original did one thing better, this version of Touching Evil is still far and away the better experience. Because we've literally found one place where the original kind of did one thing better.
Yeah, and episode 6 deals with the horse mutilation.
Oh, okay. So yeah, I figured we would get the horse mutilation later. So all right, that'll be interesting. Okay, so that's that for episode 2 and 3, or 3 and 4, depending on how you're counting, of Touching Evil. Next time we are back for the Lainey episode and what might be War Relief, but we don't know. We'll be excited to see. Will Bradley Cooper show up as Mark next week?
Yes.
We could easily, oh, he will, all right, I was about to say, we could easily find out.
It's, where is it? What number are we looking at?
5 or 4, depending on how they're counting. The Lainey episode.
Agent.
Slash them. Yeah? No. Agent Mark shows up?
No, you can't tell them because of the way they set up the...
Oh, okay. Well, you know what? Why don't we just find out by watching the episodes? I think we can always do that, right? So as always, I'm going to encourage you to go and find these online in a quasi-legal way. I'm sure you, wherever pirates Rivers. Hang out, you're going to be able to find them. Mark Rivers. There you go.
It's Agent Rivers, the replacement for Krakauer.
There you go. So that'll be Mark. So I encourage you to check these out for yourselves, because while you can watch the original Touching Evil, certain terrible corporations are keeping everybody else from being able to watch this honestly pretty fascinating remake of the show.
Yeah,
it's a really interesting show that is being hidden from us, which is too bad, because it's like, it's also just a great showcase for all of these actors. Mm-hmm. Tragically, I think Vera Farmiga hasn't had enough to do yet. Hopefully she'll get more coming forward, but her, like, she is doing a great job of standing up to Dave.
Mm-hmm.
Which I'm really enjoying watching. She's not getting bowled over by Dave, which is great. And I'm very interested to see how this character deepens as the show goes on. And
well, it's going to be,
I mean, we really ask is she going to sleep with the reporter?
Yeah, and that's, we'll find out next week.
And we'll have a whole conversation about that if she does.
Yeah. And the funny thing is that the serial killing in that is going to be interesting to see, because they've split
mm-hmm.
That into... in episode 7, they deal with the part.
Hey, wait, hey, stop spoiling stuff. What are you doing?
Okay, but they're splitting it too. That's clear.
Yeah, so they're not, when the father comes back, he's not going to have to split focus with What Price a Child. They're just going to do a whole episode about this father who desperately wants revenge on Dave.
Yes, and What Price a Child is being done as well.
Okay. It's
not all that, but
they will do it. Okay. So yeah, I mean, this is like, they've really done a great job, and I look forward to seeing how they wrap it up. Okay. So, that'll be that. If you have any questions, if you have any comments, if there's any profiling related fiction you'd like us to check out, drop us a line at profilingcriminalminds@gmail.com. We would love to hear from you. If you're listening to this on an app or podcatcher, please be sure to rate and review it. That's how people find out about the show. We're going to see you back here next time for episodes 4 and 5 or 5 and 6, depending on how you read it. But until then, I'll say that's right. Au revoir.
And have a good week.